How's it going, people? Welcome back to another episode of the Here's the Crack podcast. We thought we'd do something cool with Christmas only a few days around the corner. We took a look back at 2023 and we want to share with you some of our favourite moments from this year. We hope you enjoy and we hope you have a very Merry Christmas. Let's get into this episode.
Here we go.
Right, explain this. Explain this photo.
Yeah, that is the PG version of that photo is myself on the right, Roberto Escobar, who's Pablo Escobar's brother, in the middle, and then my brother on the left. So we were in Colombia, Medellin. Actually, Medellin, they call it. What happened was we were over there for a business event, and we got chatting to the receptionist of our hotel quite a lot, every day, every afternoon. She was really lovely. Like, the people out there are really lovely. She wanted to know more about what we were doing. I was like, yeah, we're media. We do this and that, you know. So she says, you know what would be great for you? You should go and do the Escobar museum tour. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're in Medellin. We're going to do that. And she goes, no. You can actually go to Roberto Escobar's house and you actually get to meet Roberto Escobar, who's just got out of prison because all the narcos have been released now, right? Sounds a bit mad. How do you do that? I haven't seen that on TripAdvisor. No. We know what's going on. We'll help you. Take this number. Guy'll come pick you up and take you. So, right. Fucking
that sounds so sus. Yeah.
We got the cameras ready. Yeah. We got into this car, it was a little bit sus.
Yeah.
Drove to this compound, all CCTV cameras, gates, barbed wire. And then went into the house. So like into this compound, you know, you had to do a wee ID check.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in, the guy stays in the car. He's like, you go in, I stay in the car, right? No worries. There's a couple other people there as well, probably got roped in the same way we did.
Yeah.
And what actually happens is you do a quick tour. So what we learned was these guys who've just got out of jail are now poor, whereas they used to have millions and millions. Mm. So what they're doing is they're basically whoring out their house as a museum.
Nice.
So you go in and there's this Russian guy who used to smuggle cocaine from Medellin to Moscow and then he got caught and he's telling all these stories about how he used to do this and that and go to prison and it was great. Showing us the house, he goes, oh, this was Pablo Escobar's plant. He loved this plant. This was Pablo Escobar's chair. He used to sit in this chair, you know, when he was making his plans.
50 quid and you can sit in the chair, too.
Exactly. Very quickly, we realized, I was like, all right, none of this is actually Pablo's stuff at all. This is you just completely stroking us for cash in someone's house.
Yeah.
And it all started to make sense. So you just got out of jail. Where are you getting all Pablo's stuff? Like, it all got raided.
Yeah.
You know, people actually raided their house, dug up the walls to try and find their treasure. So towards the end of the tour, I was like, yeah, we were told we actually get to meet Roberto Escobar. Yeah, you get to meet him. All you have to do is buy something from the gift shop and you will actually get the opportunity to meet him and he'll sign it for you. So we're like, right, okay. Walked into the gift shop. Everything is $50, $60, $70 for fucking bullshit merch with Pablo Escobar's face on it.
Oh,
so we look for the cheapest thing. It's a $25 cocaine spoon, which you can see up there on the photo. So we're like, that's the cheapest thing, right? Let's just grab that. Brought it over and we got to go into that little room and meet Roberto. So
he looks so unamused.
Bro, he's blind.
Right.
He opened a letter bomb in jail and blew up his face.
No way.
Swear down. Because he went like that, he's like 85% blind. So we sat down.
That's blind. Like 85%. Like, you know what I mean?
I gave the camera to Jack. I was like, I turned it on. I was like, just roll because I'm going to ask him some questions. So I said to this Russian guy who loves himself, he's like, yeah, I'm the best, like narco ever.
Yeah.
I was like, if I ask him some questions, will you translate? Yeah, no problem. So he puts the little cocaine spoon down. He puts Roberto's hand on it with a Sharpie and he just does his little squiggle while Jack's recording.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, there's a YouTube video on this, like, you know, Roberto, what was Pablo like? You know, he's your brothers and businessman. Like, what was he like? I say, oh, you know, speaking in Spanish, we're getting the translation. Pablo was amazing. Pablo saved everyone's life. Pablo was the Lord, the King, like bigging him up so much. And yeah, okay, great. So how much wealth did he amass? Like, what was really going on in the narcos? And ask these questions. After the third question, the sons of him came over. I was like, no interview. I said, no, no, it's okay. The Russian mafia, the Russian narco guy goes, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I'm listening. I'm translating. I'm not going to do anything bad. No, no, no interviews, no interviews. So they actually cut the interview there and made us turn off our camera. So he shook his hand. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And then actually just left Roberto. And I was finding this Russian guy so interesting because he was giving away so much because it was like his ego.
Yeah.
He was really enjoying telling us.
Yeah.
So I went over to the garage. I started to do another interview with him. He was telling me all about how he smuggled all this and, you know, he got to go into prison and in the prison he was actually getting prostitutes and their mobile phone and all this. And then again, the brothers come over and they're like, no, no, no. We told you already.
No you interview. Talk too much.
Mate. No interview. No interview.
The next day,
and they actually. Well, that's it. They asked us to leave, so we got back in the car and drove away, and just looked at each other and went, "Me and my brother, like, that is fucking bonkers."
Yeah.
So that's the photo from the interview, which is on YouTube.
That's mad. Because so many people tell us stories, and it's like, everyone's like, "Oh, that's bullshit," but there's literally the fucking photo right there.
Who's the?
There'll be people in the TikTok comments being like, "Aye, this happened," and then there's the photo.
And the wax figure in the corner as well.
Dude, that's the thing. Yeah. That's the sort of shit they're flogging. Like,
here we go.
Girls have replied and they've been like, "Boy moths." So I've got some examples of boy moths. Boys have also joined in.
What do you mean, girls have replied?
Girls have sort of been like, annoyed
on the clips.
Not our clip.
Oh, right.
But just at the whole thing in general.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, first one, 5'10" is 6 foot.
Bollocks.
No, it's not.
That's by maths. Relatable.
Yeah, it's only when you come into, like, accusing.
Like, if a boy's like 5'10", he'll be like, I'm 6 foot. Yeah. Not thinking he'll get away with it.
Yeah, what height are you?
5'10".
No. 6 foot, bro.
I think I'm 5'10" or 11", maybe.
Nice. I actually do think my maths is a little bit skew-iff when it comes to my height, controversially.
Oh.
Because he stood up beside me the other day. Now, you say you're 6'2".
I think. I haven't measured myself in a while.
What concerned me slightly, I think you were wearing your big chunky Gore-Tex Air Force Ones, which makes me think you had a couple more inches on me. Not inches, maybe millimetres. But you stood up beside me and I kind of went, maybe I'm not 6'2". Maybe I'm like 6'1" a bit.
Smaller.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm like 6'5".
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe I'm 5'10".
Yeah, moving on.
Anyway.
Buying 3-in-1 shampoo is better than buying shampoo, conditioner, and body wash.
Fair. I mean, if you can get it all done in one wash.
I disagree.
Financially,
maybe I'm a
better decision. Financially.
He is a very one thing I've came to realise about Aaron from getting to know him this past while, you take great pride in your scent.
Yeah, and my hair. And
this
my
man, you know where he shops at for his scents? Rituals.
I don't even know what that
no
is.
No expense spared.
Don't know what that is.
You know, the proper.
It's like a spa brand.
Spa brand.
My shampoo.
Like Lucinda got me some rituals for Christmas. She was like, I thought I'd treat you to some rituals. Then I discovered this guy shops at it all the time.
Shampoo, body wash, deodorant, all comes thing. From
wow.
Rituals.
Learning something.
And that's all from the big bucks I get paid at Here's the Crack Podcast.
Okay. Biomoths is getting six. Can't speak. Biomoths is getting 6 texts in a row and only replying to one.
That's fair.
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Biomoths is having a 70-inch TV but no dining table.
Yeah, that's fair.
It was me and uni.
That's relatable. Biomoths is not going on dates or buying flowers because it's too expensive, but going golfing every weekend with the boys.
I love how we're like looking at each other because we know.
Oops.
We do this.
Yeah, we've all done that.
The women have spoke.
Biomoths is saying you don't know how to do the washing, but spending 3 hours cleaning your car.
Fair. Fair.
Biomoths is referring to a sports team as we.
Yeah.
Even though you're not part of the team. That is all.
I do agree with the...
Can you think of any? You do yourselves. Any examples?
The only one I don't do is the shampoo 3-in-5-in-1 bullshit.
I thought that was relatable.
I would say...
There was a money one, but I can't have it in my head, but I can't think of it now.
To be fair, I can't relate to the washing one. I would wash the car, but I would also be quite like a big advocate for sticking on the washing machine, like and doing. I hate like we have like the cupboard in the hallway now, and when you open it and the basket's over full, I'm like, can't be doing with this. But But it's okay.
No, sir.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I don't do any washing.
What do you mean?
I don't wash any of my clothes. I think I haven't washed a single piece of my clothing in 5 years, minimum.
Jesus.
Holy what?
Yeah.
I very rarely do wash on, like, but I do put the odd wash on.
Good for you.
Tell you what, when Liv had COVID, like, 2 weeks ago, I did put a wash on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, you have to
hang them up and everything.
Like. I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be all like, oh, I'm pure clat, because I know there's areas of life where Lucinda takes over. But, like, washing's pretty easy, lads. Like,
I'm not saying it's hard. Do it.
I'm not challenged in the act of washing.
But then when you
do... I fucking hate doing it, though.
When I do the washing, I get told off because I do it wrong.
What do you mean you do it wrong?
That's the wrong setting. Oh, don't put them in the dryer. Don't do this. Don't do that. And I'm just like...
So
help out in the house.
Here's a thing I'd like to know. And... hopefully someone who's listening to this or watching this can be able to answer the question. I'm slightly confused because we got a new washing machine the other day and I was exploring the modes on the washing machine.
This podcast has went to new levels.
But whenever I went into the modes, like, you know the way on a washing machine you have temperature and RPM?
Okay. Is it a fucking Formula 1 car or RPM? No, but what the fuck's going on?
You have, or I think it's less.
McLaren washing machine?
Yeah, it's like revolutions per minute or something. I don't know. But I went into it, and like, so for like, there was one that I chose, like, something like, I don't know, quick and easy, put it that way. And it was like 30 degrees.
Not the first time you said that.
But like, it was it was 30 degrees and 900 RPM.
Yeah.
And I'm just using these figures. I then went on to sports mode specialize in sports.
Your washing machine,
like,
has
It has, like, for sports clothing.
Okay,
it's a new washing machine.
I think this sounds more like a car.
So I then went in, clicked it. It was also 30 degrees and 900 RPM. So what's the difference?
Maybe the time it's on for.
Maybe the time, but I mean,
are you talking about the revolutions?
Yeah,
because if it's a higher revolution, I'm not that useless at it.
The washing machine expert.
If it's a higher revolution, your clothes will come out really wrinkly. So it's really handy for like towels where it needs a wee bit of a deeper clean, and it doesn't really matter if
you
get wrinkly.
Seem to know a lot for someone.
If you put a t-shirt in on the highest revolution, it'll come out more wrinkled.
Yeah, but
than
the point.
It will in the middle.
But the point I'm trying to make is though the different modes. You know the way, like, so the point I made there is it's like. You know, a mode that could be like delicates is 30 degrees at 900 RPM, and then sports is 30 degrees at 900 RPM. So, what's the difference between them two modes?
Could it be the length of time, or could it be?
He just said that.
The pauses, you know, the pauses and shit.
I have a revolution. This podcast is about the shit because we're talking about washing.
I know, but it's not a washing. It's not about the washing machine. It's the principle.
There we go.
Whenever you started on this venture, it was like, even the way you were saying the other day when we were on the phone, mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, I've had this house in mind, and then you ended up buying two.
Yes.
So like, you didn't, that's like double bubble. Like yeah. That's not just, you're not going for one massive investment, it's two. Yes. Like, was that not did that not add more fuel? Were more people more like, you're crazy? Like,
oh, everybody was like, I was crazy with one. Yeah, 100%. So then two to the mixture. They actually, I think they thought, no, there's a problem here. She's lost her mind. But I had sold my own house. So I, you know, owned a house on a mortgage, a very sensible 3-bed semi in South Belfast. But I couldn't afford it to refurb mm-hmm. one without selling it. Mm-hmm. So I had to put it up. And don't get me wrong, I decorated it and updated it. So I made a nice profit on that. And then when I sold my home for this apartment that needed completely flipped, it was only that week, I think, I got the keys that an estate agent phoned up and said, the other one that you were bidding on has fallen through. So would you like that too? But because there was a little bit of money there from the house, I thought, well, yeah, I could have, you know, a mortgage, a buy-to-let mortgage on the second one. I think I could afford it, and checked with obviously mortgage advisor and everybody that needed to check with. And they said, yeah, you could do it, like, go for it. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And actually it worked out a wee bit better because the trades were all there for one. So they may as well and go and do the second one at the same time.
Yeah. So in terms of your first venture down this, you bought two properties.
Yes.
What was the kind of time frame to getting them done up and like your first venture, because it was probably
would have been the hardest? Like, is it your first time getting into this?
First was definitely the hardest, and I thought 6 months was a good kind of gauge for me. It was just thought I can cope with the repayments for 6 months, and you know, I in my head I just thought I could get this done in this amount of time. It seems reasonable. You know, you see people on TV shows and they're like 8 weeks, and I was like, oh, there's absolutely no chance that's happening. So just be a bit more realistic about it. And then again, because I was doing the same kind of thing, it was both two bedroom apartments. And I had the trades there, and I had chosen a kind of cookie cutter approach, so chosen the same kind of look for both of them.
Yeah.
The 6 months, both of them were refurbished and on the market. Now, it took a bit longer once they were sale agreed and conveyanced and to go through. But those in those 6 months, the profit from those two bed apartments after everybody was paid off was £102,000. And I was like, oh my goodness, actually, do I have to go to work anymore? Like, I could flip like once a year, or, you know, maybe twice a year, and this would cover the profit. Like, this would be my wage. And then that's just kind of where that idea was born, because what I was looking for from one of those properties was £20,000. And don't get me wrong, whilst I was in the middle of renovating those properties and it was £20,000 I'm looking for, you know, the joiners wanting so many thousand, the plumbers wanting so many thousand, and I just felt like I had a money gun and I was just throwing it to these people. And then I was like, oh my goodness, if I made 10, that would be good, because you were starting to think, oh, this is getting out of control.
Yeah.
But 41 on one and 61 on the other.
Did that sort of like exceed your expectations then?
Oh, it blew me away.
Yeah,
it changed my life. It blew me away.
I did.
It opened my mind. Oh my goodness, the possibilities and the opportunities that comes with that. It's definitely not what I thought. That I was just aiming for £20,000 because I wanted to put that towards building a house.
How do you think you got to that, like, to that figure? You know, you said 40 and 60.
Yeah.
But you're expecting 20. Is it just like you underestimated how much they were worth, or did you put more work into it?
I think I'm a bit conservative at the start.
Okay.
If 20K. Now, maybe I was probably saying that out loud. If I got 20,000, I'd be delighted. In my head, I was like, please let me get 30 or something like that, you know. But and then obviously, as I said, once the money was being handed out left, right and centre, the panic set in. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, sometimes you have that thought before you go to bed. As long as I break even, I'm not out any money.
Yeah.
So it just completely exceeded that. And I thought that once people got in and seen the quality of the homes, that's when the bidding started. Yeah. So when people are in the door and they're seeing, you know, something they love and something they want to live in, and a product that they can just walk into and literally set their toothbrush in and put their clothes in the wardrobe and live there, then they fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And then it just increased the bidding. And so there's like obviously a bit of a bidding war with it, and it just went higher than I expected.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me asking, like, how much did you pay for the houses at the start?
So the first one was $82,000 for a two bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
In Ravenhill. And I spent just close to 16 on it and sold it for 140.
God. And the second one?
Was
the second one was 100,000, and it was a two bedroom apartment in Newton Breda in South Belfast. I don't know if you know it. So it was 100,000 for the two bedroom apartment. I spent 13 on that one.
Yeah.
I lived in that one. Do not recommend. I lived in that one, and at the end, I sold it for 174,000.
Like, they're not like overly expensive houses. You think at that lower end, you're not the price, like the amount of profit you get off them isn't as much as that.
Yeah,
but obviously, it is an achievable thing for someone trying to start out.
It is definitely achievable. They are the lower end of the scale, and people say, "Oh, but that was like 3-4 years ago. It's changed now, the prices." Mm. Well, that £82,000. I have actually just currently renovating an apartment in that block at the minute that I spent 92,000 on it. So same style, it's £10,000 dearer for me to purchase, but that's because we're so many years down the line. But then again, I would expect an extra £10,000 on the sale price at the end.
There we go.
Well, here's the thing that the TV don't tell you.
Yeah.
First of all, in the second and third episode, there is... In the second episode, there was three teams.
Yeah.
So three teams. There's three choices. We had a Wells pizza, a meat pizza, and a meat-free pizza.
Yeah.
Ours, we were given the meat-free pizza. So there you go. Do your best with that. But then Gordon comes on camera and he goes, you know, that's a bold choice. I'm looking at the TV going...
Like, it wasn't your decision to make.
Do you know what I mean? So certain things are set up for TV.
Was it like that every week, or was it?
There's certain things that is set up for TV to make the viewer.
Well, talk to us a bit about that. Like, was there parts of it for you where like, fuck, like I thought it would have been a bit. I didn't expect
it
to be like
that. In the third episode, you're saying I'm stepping away from Andy. Yeah. Because he's the team leader. Everybody gets a team. I was the team leader. You could see I was the team leader. Yeah. I was assigned the team leader in the first episode.
Yeah.
But no, what I was referring to was the first episode, because you like there was a bit where you were doing the meat, and then I think it was like the vegetable side of things. Didn't look like you were doing it anyway, but you kind of came over and said something, I remember because you goes, "I'm gonna make this honey whatever sauce,"
yeah,
and your mom went, "Dude, we've got it sorted," and you just kind of went, "Grant,
no, I went, have you got the recipe for it?"
Yeah,
I think something like that.
Yeah, and like kind of just,
he says, "Don't you worry about that."
Yeah, 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 and you kind of just went like dead on, but like I think
I ended up. Do you want to? He ended up making a big bowl full of dressing. It was right at the last second when we needed the dressing. So I just set it to the side, started a new one, made a wee tiny bit of dressing and dressed the veg. And I don't even think he noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
TV's mad, like.
It is mad.
Yeah.
Was there any, like, what about the relationship then with Gordon Ramsay? Like, what was he like on the show? Like?
There was no relationship with Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
Zero. He comes in and shouts at you and makes good TV. And that's it.
Is it very much like what you see on screen is really the amount of time he's there?
I never seen Gordon Ramsay off camera.
Yeah.
Not once.
That's so strange.
It is strange. It's a shame. It's a shame as well because, excuse me, it's a shame as well because that's why I wanted to go over. I wanted to go over. Maybe he wants to ask you a couple of questions about your business or whatever, but that was the expectancy that I had when I went over, but you know, don't always.
Especially because, like, you see old sort of Gordon Ramsay back way, way back when there was no, like, sort of digit, like, you know, like, whatever. But you seen, like, old was at Kitchen Nightmares and stuff, and he did come across this, like, fiery, like, character. But then, like, recently, like, there's been other, he's branched off into, like, other forms of, like, TV shows where it's not, like, he effing and blinding people. Know, and he does actually come across as like,
a nice guy.
A nice dude. Whereas, obviously, like, you got the part where you didn't have the privilege of maybe seeing, maybe there is that side to him, I don't know. Like, you didn't have the privilege, you just got the side off him, which was, this is TV.
Yeah.
And like,
There was one when we were doing the seaweed in Wales, he off camera, he'd said to me, "You're not going to go for a swim now, Gary, are you?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "No, chef." And I went, fuck.
Yeah.
Because I, over the course of a couple of episodes, over the course of the three episodes, the three challenges, whatever, the production kept saying to me, "Don't be calling him chef."
Yeah.
But it's very hard to not call someone chef when you're in both the same industries and you've looked up to him as a chef for 20 years or whatever. Yeah. There was another one as well after Sophie went in the first episode.
Yeah. That was the right decision, by the way, I thought. Yeah.
after Sophie went in the first episode, he walked out and then he came back in, if you remember.
Yeah.
And he said, "Look, I want to know, I just don't want to know what yous are doing, you know, on camera. I want to know what yous are doing off camera, like what yous are watching on TV." And I just butted in and I was like, Gordon, I've been watching you for 20 years. He said, "I don't give a fuck, Gary."
Yeah.
Did I?
And I just went, right, no bother.
Did he say that?
He says, what? "This is about you, not about me, Gary."
Here we go.
We done a question box on Instagram.
Yeah.
Asking about conspiracy theories.
I think this came off the back of the clip that was posted.
This was actually someone that commented on our clip.
You love
actually.
That clip, don't you?
I love that clip.
It's sitting on like 145k on Instagram. Yeah, it spiked up the amount of abuse you've got, Sunshine.
What abuse.
I'm just reading the comments every night, crying yourself to sleep.
So basically, Aaron asked in a podcast, like 135, he basically asked, "What's the wildest conspiracy that you might actually believe in?" So if you want to go and listen to that, go back. But we posted one of the clips where Aaron basically says that conspiracy theory that you controversially might believe in is the Just Stop Oil one. If you're looking more information, go back and watch that podcast.
Everyone took that very well.
Yes. But from then, the plethora of people who have been coming up with their own conspiracy theories has been a bit mad. We'd like to delve into that more.
Here's a guy that commented on that clip, actually. He's called Fanboy. I'm not giving his full fucking name out.
Fanboy.
But he's called Fanboy.
Fanboy NOV.
Yeah. And one, he's actually listed three. He's actually listed three conspiracies, but one of them is, the first one actually is, the Titanic never sank.
Right.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's at the bottom of the ocean.
I'm pretty sure too, but I did do some research on it and it's starting to make sense. So
what?
Yeah.
So did James Cameron not literally go down to the bottom of the ocean and have dinner on the Titanic?
No,
pretty sure.
Wait, hear this, right?
Pretty sure.
Aaron's looking for another clippable moment.
Let's
here.
Go back.
But
let's
if you look at the facts,
let's go back to the early 1900s. The
Take me
owners,
back,
one yeah. of the main shareholders of the company that created the Titanic or owned the Titanic as a vessel, was J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh.
And
are you on the podcast, Aaron?
Let's just keep that in the back of our minds for now.
Yes.
Okay. The Olympic, right? I don't know if you've heard of the Olympic. That's Titanic's sister ship. So it was built around the same time, but it was finished before the Titanic.
Yep.
It went on a sailing expedition to New York and back. And on the expedition, it got damaged and it had to return to Belfast to get fixed. It cost quite a lot of money.
Okay.
They then fixed it up, and then on its next voyage, it got fucking damaged again, right? Sent back to Belfast, needed it fixed. Conveniently, this was about a week before the Titanic left Belfast, right? Turns out, the cost to fix the Titanic, or the cost to fix the Olympic, would be too high to make anything profitable anymore for the Olympic. So, what did they do? They solved two problems in one. See, because some of J.P. Morgan's biggest rivals were going to be on the Titanic on its maiden voyage.
Oh my God, I think I know where this is going.
So they switched everything over and they made the Titanic look like the Olympic and the Olympic look like the Titanic. So they sailed the Olympic, pretending it was the Titanic, into the middle of the ocean, fucked it into an iceberg and sank it to collect the insurance money. Because it wouldn't be profitable anymore. And while doing that, killing JP Morgan's biggest rivals in business.
Holy fuck.
So this is the conspiracy.
When you started that, I was like, this is going to be so shit. And that was amazing. Yeah. Oh my God.
Do you know how I knew he thought that? Because halfway during it, I heard him go.
Holy fuck. Is this, wow. Where's this all came from?
So then, does that mean, so basically they've done the old switcheroo. So the Titanic was technically the Olympic, but the Olympic is now, the Olympic is still the Olympic, the Olympic is still,
so the, no, ship,
the Titanic is the Olympic.
The Olympic is the Titanic.
They did a switcheroo.
But it was broken.
Yeah, so
and then the original Titanic is now labelled as the Olympic.
Well, what happened at then?
Is it not in Belfast?
No, that's a different ship.
Ah.
But the Olympic, I believe, if I remember correctly, it served fairly well. It went through both World War One and World War Two, and then it became like a I think it became something to do in France, and I think up to the end of its life it became a restaurant on the River Seine in Paris.
People are going to hate you for this though, because of how big the Titanic is.
See,
the whole tourist industry in Belfast relies on the Titanic.
If it means anything, the Olympic was also built in Belfast.
The Olympic Museum.
So
does it sound the same?
I think it's less the ship and more the story. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
They both looked very similar. They were just slightly different
sizes.
Where
did you research this?
Is
this like a well-known conspiracy theory?
There's a lot of articles about it. Like, there's actually multiple conspiracy theories about the Titanic.
If I can also put this in, we are talking about conspiracies. Just because he says it doesn't mean he believes. You don't believe in it, do you?
No.
I think he does.
No, there's...
He said he doesn't
not as confident as the response I would liked.
Here we go.
You mentioned there about the anxious type and stuff. What are, like, so, like, immediately you're saying this and I'm honestly, like, applying it to, like, things that have happened that I'm like, okay, I could have handled that better and I could, which is great. I'm sure people listening are doing the same thing, but you talk about the types. So, like, what are the types and, like, how do you know what type you are?
So, it's a gentleman who wrote a book. It's called Attached. So, you can read the book or you can do the free test online. The book's very good. The free test online is free attachment style test. And you just do the test and ask you questions. I'd highly recommend doing your love language test, which again is free. Free, put in free, 5 love language test, do that. And there's also argument style tests, free argument style tests. And you get all this information back to your email. And it's just... And do these things when you're in a good place with your partner and talk about them like, oh my dear God, that was me. There's one of the attachments that there's one of the argument styles. It's a porcupine. And I'm like, So I'm really feeling like being a porcupine right now, but I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm really feeling anxious right now, but I'm really trying to sit in it. I really feeling really avoidant right now. I want to avoid this conversation like the plague, but I really want to sit in it with you because I want a great relationship. It's just putting these words in your vocabulary, you know.
Mm-hmm. What other types?
That's it. Secure, anxious, avoidant.
So those are the three of them?
That's the three, that's it.
Secure.
So like we're sitting around here all very secure. Okay.
Yeah.
But as soon as there would be a bit of conflict between any of you guys, or you almost default to childhood patterns of either anxious or avoidant.
Yeah. Which is okay.
So it's not black and white. You're not just one. You can either like switch between or.
People tend to be more one.
Yeah.
People tend to be more one. But again, it's situational, you know? Situational. So you know, if you don't know how to do it, you're going to avoid it. Mm. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah.
Would avoidant be as, like, would it be like, I'm not talking about this. Mm-hmm. I'm away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bosh done. Anxious mm-hmm. would be what, like?
Talk it to death.
Ah, yes.
Uh-huh. Avoidant also could be, you know, people who don't argue.
Mm-hmm.
People say to me something like, we just never argue. I'm like, okay, but are you able to say all your words, or you just don't know how to do it, so you just avoid any sort of conflict or any sort of thing like that, which would worry me more.
I think that's a big flex for a lot of people. Like some couple, like if you're out on like a double date or something, they're like, haha, we hardly ever argue, and I'm like, bollocks, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
What is that a worrying?
Well, it would be something for me to look at to say, if you never argue, you know, are you just clones of each other, or are you not arguing because you don't know how to do it well and you're just scared? You're avoidant, maybe. You're just avoidant and you're too avoidance, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like people just find it difficult to talk about it, so we just avoid it altogether, basically. Like, yeah.
And I mean, we get angry. The red mist descends. That red mist is fueled by chemicals and hormones, and that you have to almost like wait till that passes by. It's like, it's a bit like, geez, have you ever watched Inside Out? It's a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
It's like the red mist explodes and all the other emotions are like, oh, run for the hills, we don't know how to cope, you know. Yeah. I mean, we have to wait till that red mist calms down and we go, okay, see, when that happened I felt like this. And here's the thing, guys, we are entitled to have a feeling about something. I'm entitled to feel like that thing over there is ugly, and you're entitled to feel, I think that thing over there is beautiful.
Yeah.
Doesn't make you wrong and me right. They are our feelings. Mm. And when we get into relationships and we're together a long time, we start thinking that we have to agree with everything, and we don't.
Yeah. Subjective.
Yeah.
And for like, say there's like people listening there, maybe in a new relationship, like sort of just starting out, like what sort of advice would you give them to like have a good relationship?
Start all those questions. All those questions, all those wee quizzes are great. Do those three quizzes. Buy my ebook.
Yeah.
It's $7.99, which is not going to kill the bank. You're going to get a cocktail for that. Just start educating yourself. My whole thing is, bring me something that you don't get any education on. We get education on everything. I sat down here today and you guys were like, headphones this, mic that. You get education on everything. Educate ourselves. Mm-hmm. Make it a normal thing. This is okay. It's one of the hardest things we have to do. Be in relationship. Educate yourself on how to do it.
Here we go.
This is the thing I wanted to ask as well. Like, we went to the Burlington fight in Belfast, and It's funny because I don't know how to put this where it doesn't, like, we were sitting up in the crowd, like, watching in, and at one stage, like, from an outsider's perspective, and this is why I'm really interested to hear, like, what it's like actually in there, because you hear a lot of people, and obviously in the sport you're in, there's a lot of people critiquing, there's a lot of people giving their opinions, but they're not actually, they're not shutting the cage, they're not doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, like, at one stage, I was like, this, he looks like he's getting well and truly battered here.
Yeah.
And then you won.
Yeah.
So like, explain that from like the inside, because obviously like we're looking from the outside going, this doesn't look,
no, that, like, that, you're so right, that is the worst situation it could probably be in. Is the one that you've seen, like, you know, when the referee's shouting, Reese, you need to defend yourself, you need to move, you need to work, you need to they always say you need to show me something, and that's to show them you're still in the fight. And I remember giving them thumbs up and being like, I'm fine. But then, meanwhile, I have a 19-stitch gash across my forehead.
Yeah,
and like, it was crazy, and like, face was crimson mask. But like, the feeling, like, I can only tell you this, and you can only trust me when I'm saying it. I did not know I was cut. I did not know I was bleeding.
Because that's what I was thinking, like, whenever I was looking into that there. Like, obviously everyone else watching the fight can see you, but you can't see you.
I can't see me. Like,
yeah. Did you know you had that in your face? Like, no idea.
Nope. Not until... I have a photo of my phone. I remember Rodney saying to me backstage, he's like, you're going to hospital. And I'm like, why? And I cut in your head. And I'm like, I'm not even cut. Like, I'm fine. And he's like, give me your phone. Or his phone. Took a photo. And I was like, oh my word, like, that's in my forehead. I couldn't believe it. And this is like 20 minutes after the fight.
Yeah.
So adrenaline must be a hell of a drug. Because didn't feel a thing.
What was your mentality? And like, did you at one stage say to yourself, obviously ignoring the referee, I'm absorbing blows here, like, and
or no, so like in the fight, like, so you're getting hit, that's kind of given,
normal,
you'll understand that. When the referee says that, you know, you have to act a bit different to show him that you're fine. So like, not one stage was I ever like, oh, I'm in trouble. Never, ever, ever did I think that. I only was like, the ref's gonna stop us because I'm not showing him what he needs to see.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's weird. Like, you're playing the game then. So how to do that? Gave him a worse position because it looked technically better and looked like I was doing something, and then he cut me with the elbow. But then I knew, like, I remember getting up at the end of the first with Justin. I said, that's one done, like, kind of just like a cheeky, like, that's one done. And in my opinion, that was like, you're gonna have to do it again and again and again and again, because it was a five rounder. And I knew I had him. Like, it sounds so backwards because we were coming out of the worst possible round, like a 10-8 round, which is as bad as it can get. And I just knew, I knew he couldn't have done it again.
Mm,
you know what I mean? It's very hard. Like, there's nothing more soul destroying when you do something and go for it and go for it. And see when the ref's shouting for you to finish the fight and you're putting 110% effort in, and then end of the round, you have to do it again. A soul destroying. Like,
was there ever a moment in that fight where you were like, fuck, I might not win this? Or was it just you were just hyper focused the whole time you were going
out? I was in a really bad position. I went to a really worse position and the crowd were like, yes, like, and I was like, no, like, you don't understand, this is worse. Yeah. But like, I mean, there's times, like, in that brief moment, you think, oh, these people are here in Belfast and this isn't going well.
Yeah.
Never is there a case of, like, I can never ever see myself in it during a fight in my imagination of standing there with his hand raised. I'm always like, I'll just find a way to do it.
Here we go. I have been looking on Reddit and I found a couple of things. Am I the asshole?
We're back. So
we're
throwback.
Back. Or you can get involved in this as well, right? So here's a good one. Am I the asshole? I have a female co-worker who repeatedly calls me out regarding my weight. I'm 5'9", 115 pounds, 51 kilo. I'm very thin. I'm very thin. She is extremely overweight. All the time she makes comments about my weight. She doesn't call me by my name. She calls me Slim. And I even heard her say one time, what are you asking me for? Go ask Toothpick.
Oh, referring to him.
Get this. She once said, what are you asking me for? Go ask Toothpick. And she has also said stuff like, you need some meat in your bones, girl. And you need to eat. I find this strange. I have only worked there for 8 days.
What?
She's only been at the company for eight days.
Jesus Christ. You can't get on like that.
I have asked her very nicely to stop. Yesterday I asked her to stop calling me Slim again. And she said basically, it's my mouth. I can say what I want. Today, when she said, morning, Slim, I replied, all right, Chunky. And she got very upset and actually started crying. Everybody here at work, there's only 6 of us in total, is saying, you're so wrong, you should apologize, because being called fat is different than being called skinny, because being called skinny is a compliment.
Oh, fuck me.
I said, as long as she calls me Slim, I will call her Chunky, and now I'm the bad person in the office. Am I the asshole if I don't apologize? The owner/manager has completely ignored the situation, saying it's a high school issue and we should figure it out. We don't have an HR department. There are only 6 of us working here in the cupcake shop.
Cupcake shop.
We are all regular. We are all regular employees. I went to the owner before I called her Chunky and I asked him to talk to her because I felt she was harassing me. That's when he said, we can handle it ourselves. That's why I called her Chunky. I told her to stop calling me Slim, and I didn't like it, and she continued to do so. She didn't stop doing it after I asked multiple times, and I didn't know what to do. Besides what she was doing to me, she brought up my weight, I brought up hers. Am I the asshole?
No. This is a clear case of you can dish it out, but you can't take it.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
fucking prick.
Or in definitely. This case, she can take it if it's food.
Wow.
Yeah.
To remind you.
I was working in a cupcake shop. Shit's the fucking fat one, well.
The only thing I would say is like 8 days in.
8 days in.
This yeah. is happening.
But like, I would say she's probably just like, oh, like, do you know the way you walk into workplaces and there's just people who become overly familiar, and that's fair. Mm. But like 8 days in, and as well as that, if someone came up to you, if you were like saying like, oh, all right, Slim, and they were like, listen, like, I actually have a really, you know, I'm not comfortable with my weight, you'd be like, oh, I'm a bit of a dick here, I'm so sorry. She's like, it's my mouth, yeah. I can do what I want with it. That is called a toxic work environment, and you should leave.
She's funny. Yeah, as well as that, like, you're 8 days in, would you not just quit and
yeah.
get it on
yeah.
the show?
Yeah.
And
it's not people. It's not like you've signed for Google.
It's not a good start.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you've started working a bucking cupcake shop. Like, yeah. Go work for McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'd say she's tried to assert herself as the funny guy in the workplace, and it has backfired on her.
Laughing now, Chubbs.
Here we go.
People say, oh, you can say you're happier in Australia because the weather's good, but we had a really bad 2 years there. It's called La Nina, where it just rained for pretty much 2 years in Australia. And that's when I kind of, the penny dropped for me, and I thought, God, maybe it's not the weather that's making me happy. Maybe it's that I'm not actually hanging around with people I've hung around with my whole life because I had to hang around with them because that's all I've known. Maybe it's like I'm choosing the things that I do better for my life. I'm not just trying to fit in and play GAA when I'm no good at it. I'm actually doing things like boxing and Muay Thai because I want to do it. And I'm getting up early. I never saw sunrise before I went to Australia. I would have come home at sunrise from a night out. Yeah. But getting up early and actually having that bit of your morning before starting your day is just golden. Like, and like I say, I've then carried those elements back home with me to Ireland to realize that it wasn't Australia that was making me happy. It was the elements to your daily routine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense though, because like part of, I've always said Australia sounds class because I love the idea of like the sun, getting up early, coffee, a wee sea dip. But then like between my two jobs, like between the job I'm doing now and my previous job, I took like 2 months off. And I don't think, like I always say, I always look back at it, I don't think I ever like lay in the morning. I was always up. They were going to do like sea dip, and like out of me, I was always also off, and I was like, let's go sea dip and let's get coffee. And it was like a brilliant time. But now we're like back to like 9 to 5. And if someone said to me, do you want to do a wee sea dip in the morning? I'd be like, are you mad? I'm not getting up before 7.
You need to hang out with me. Yeah. I was in the sea this morning.
Nice.
Today's a big day to get in the sea, you know, on the 15th. Apparently the cure's in the water. This is such an Irish thing.
No.
On the 15th. You ever heard
that? We had this conversation in work like a couple of weeks ago.
It's
like,
so
people talking
funny.
About getting the cure and all. And you're like, do you believe it or not? And you're like,
I don't know, like. It's so funny, yeah. Like it's definitely like a mindset thing, but apparently the cure was in the water only today, not tomorrow. So if you didn't get in, you're snookered. But it's muscle memory, and that's what I've realized after coming back to Ireland. Those first few weeks after Christmas, you know, when nobody wants to do anything, everybody's broke, and it was really dark and cold, I just remember thinking, this is miserable, and what am I doing? I was sleeping in past 9 o'clock in the morning and getting out of the routine of doing things, dragging myself to the gym, just feeling really like slouchy and lazy.
Yeah.
And then I had to take myself back to what was it in Australia that was making me happy? And it was the getting up early, going for my coffee and my sunrise. And like for most of January in Ireland, there was no sun that came up. It was just a dark sky. But I said to myself, I'm going to do it. And I bought one of those sunrise alarm clocks. You can get them on Amazon. And it literally glows. The sun like rises in your face in the mornings because I don't have my phone in my room. I would usually like reach for my phone and scroll on social media for 2 hours and waste the start of the day. So I've made a conscious effort not to have my phone in my room. And this sunrise alarm clock just like brightens on your face, a bit like the Teletubby sun. And it's just like this lovely feeling in the morning. And even when it's dark, raining, snowing, ice, there were some mornings I couldn't even walk on the path, the footpath. It was that icy. But I said to myself, I need to commit to this every single day. So I just kept doing it. And you never regret getting up early because it's that bit of the morning that no one else is up, like nobody. And you just have time to process your day rather than, I mean, before I left to go to Australia, I was getting up, if I had left the house at 7:30, I was getting up at 7:15, shoving toast into my mouth, probably eating it while on my way to work, still trying to do my makeup while driving, not very safe, and getting to work and then feeling scattered. Whereas now it's almost like a sacred space in the morning where you just have time to yourself. You don't have to talk to anybody. Yeah. I don't go on social media until 9 a.m. For work purposes. So I'm up from 5 and I have those 4 hours in the morning just to reassess things. And it's made a massive difference to my life.
Here we go. Right, I had an awful situation with Aidsir. Now, we were on the same bill at V Festival. So imagine this as a tent of, like, I don't know, maybe 1,500, 2,000 people. They're not coming to see me. They're coming to see Eliezer. But they have to get in early to the tent. You know, because to get a seat, whatever. Like, so say Eliezer's on at 4 o'clock and he's doing 45 minutes. I'm on at 6. And it, trust me, as soon as he's done, they all leave the crowd, right? I'm going on to, he's going on to 2,000. I'm going on to maybe 300. If I'm lucky. But we're putting a port cabin. And he arrives in a Mini Cooper with an assistant. And he gets out. And I'm like, fuck, Jesus, Eddie Izzard. I was like, oh, Jesus. So it was me, Tom Allen, Josh Widdicombe, Eddie Izzard, Shappy Corsandi. I'm like in the middle of that, doing 20 minutes, whatever. Like, and he comes into this porta cabin. So in the porta cabin, imagine there's two sofas, this confectionery table, there's tea and coffee machines, there's a small white fridge, very basic, you know, backstage at this V Festival. It was V Festival in Stoke on Trent. There's two Vs. There's one in Essex. I think they're finished now. But there's one in Essex and there's one in Stoke, and the bands would swap over. So whoever played Friday in Stoke would then do Saturday in Essex. It was like Leeds and Reading. You just did swap over, like, you know. And he comes in, he sits down. So I say, sitting there where you are, and I'm just like, I was going, you all right? Yeah. What the fuck? What do I say? Like,
yeah.
Normally, if you know you're going to be working with somebody, I was working with Kevin Bridges once and I knew he loved football. So I just straight in. Talked about football. That was it. Didn't talk about comedy. So I was like, I get on all right. And he was like, not making any. Like, I'm breaking it. Like, so I got up to go to the table. You know, the, there's like Haribo's and Tunnocks tea cakes and all that. Right? And I went up and I just went, do you want a Kit Kat? Right? And he was like, yeah. And I just looked down, there was no Kit Kats. I was panicked. There was Haribo, there was Kit Kats, there was single Twixes, there was Milky Ways. And I was like, oh, sorry. Shit. He was like, hey, what have you got? And I was like, Kit Kats? I was like, oh, there's no Kit Kats. Like, just looking at me, and I went, but he didn't see me, but you just offered me a Kit Kat. I just went, yeah. That was it. And he left about a couple of minutes later and never saw him again. So people said he met Eddie Izzard. I offered him a Kit Kat that wasn't available. So I was like, you do get a bit awkward, flustered, a bit flustered, like.
Here
we go.
So this one's called The Horny Wife. So my 20, so I'm 28 female, my husband's 31 male. My husband had to spend 2 months in a different state to work for work. He came back 9 days ago. I'm obviously thrilled he's back and I've missed him a lot. You know what that means. I was hoping we would be able to spend some time together, just the two of us. However, his mother, 56 female, come over. She came over and when he was supposed to come home. I was slightly annoyed, but I know she was just excited to see her son to be back. However, she never left. Like, I was prepared to deal with maybe 2-3 days, but now it's been 9 days. She still won't leave.
Jesus.
What the fuck? Because she's been here for 9 days, we haven't had a second of time together. She insists on staying here instead of booking a hotel. For the record, she lives an hour away. The guest room is right next door to ours. And may I add, the walls are very, very thin. When the two of us got out, she comes with. When the two of us go out, she comes with us, or makes one of us stay with her, because otherwise we would be bad hosts if we didn't. She follows us around the house constantly. We want to cuddle and watch movies, she's sitting on the armchair. We want to go to a romantic restaurant, better make that a table for three. We have even left her in the living room to go chat in our room, and she follows us. Earlier today, I just blankly asked her, leave. Even though both of us have been hinting that she needs to go, she kept saying she wasn't ready to go yet and wanted more time with her beloved son. I tried telling her we wanted alone time, and she kept insisting that she join us. Finally, I snapped. I looked at her and I said, since you seem to be oblivious, I want to put this as bluntly as possible. I want to ride your son. If you don't want to see or hear that, then you need to leave. I know this isn't the classiest response ever, but I was frustrated. Anyway, she yelled at me, but eventually left. We finally got to have our alone time, but now she's blowing up both our phones, saying that I'm disgusting. I have no respect for her son, her son, or myself. She keeps telling my husband that he shouldn't be with someone so crude, and how dare he let me speak to her like that. I'm sure you get the idea. I know that what I said wasn't particularly appropriate, but am I the asshole? You are not.
No.
I think your husband's the asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
He's sitting on the fence.
Yeah. What is he doing? Like?
Do you know what I mean?
That's up to him to do that. Like.
You need to take your ma aside and go, Mum, listen, I love you. I don't think
she should have done
and,
that, though.
Like. And, like, I'll come visit you if you want to go on. I'll come visit you in a couple of days. I'll call down and have dinner with you and Dad.
Sure, lives in Norway.
Well, clearly,
she lives in Norway. Yeah.
Like that's different than what fucking here in Korean.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, lah.
It's not far.
See, so, when you started the story, I was expecting the mother to be from like another state, like fucking 14 hours away. Yeah. And I'd be like, right, fair enough, but that's fucking insane. Yeah.
It's ridiculous, like
a ridiculous.
I don't think she should have done that though.
She's lost faith. She's lost the husband.
Like, yeah. What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. Grow a set.
Get her out.
Like, get her out now.
Yeah, exactly.
9 days.
Get her out. Like,
you'd be very close. Losing the head after 9 days. Huh?
I imagine her. But, like, he's been away for 2 months. So, like, you imagine, like, 2 months and 9 days. She's probably with. She's, like, he's probably got off the plane. She's picked him up at the airport and said, all right, big boy. I see you're back. You know what I mean?
Give me some of that, big boy.
I've been waiting at the baggage drop for, you know,
time to see me back.
Time to take me to a different state. And then the Maz rocked at the door. Oh, hello there. She's like, oh dear. Oh, come on in. 2 days goes by. 3 days goes by. You can imagine the husband probably rolling over and wanting a bit of boogie, and she's like, the walls are very thin.
What's the husband? It doesn't sound like the wife was the one fucking making excuses.
But I think she could
should have,
like,
just went for it, hey? Yeah. While she was in the house and just went, like, they didn't want to go home.
She can't really complain about this married couple fucking riding. Yeah. It's probably nobody.
She should probably be walking into the room.
Can I come too?
Here we go. To London, and in my mind I was like, ah, cool, I'm going to London. I told all my friends back then, I was 14, I told them it's cool, hey guys, guess what, I'm going to London, baby. They're like, yeah, because I've never in my life heard about Ireland. I've heard of London because London is a big thing. Everybody goes to London. If you want a great life, go to London, make money, and come back to Africa and build a big house.
Yeah,
that's the rule, that's how it goes, you know. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to London, I'm going to make money and come back and build a big mansion. That's my mindset. And I came here and I was like, this is not London. I couldn't even understand the accent when I came to Ireland, because I was like, hello, what's the story? I was like, wait, what? You want a story? It was just kind of like, she actually made me came to Ireland because of my auntie was here.
Yeah.
And she knew if I stayed in Africa, things might be different. Either I join a gang or crime or whatever it is. So she wanted a better life. So she was like, you know what? You just go and stay with my sister. She's going to take care of you and be good, you know, that kind of way. So, and make sure you go to college and finish your education and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's been a great journey anyway.
Yeah. And you arrived with your aunt, and what was that like? What was the transition moving?
So it was different. And the only thing that was just similar is the Guinness. We have Guinness in Nigeria and we have Guinness in Ireland. So I was like, at least thank God you guys have Guinness. Yes. I mean, let's enjoy that together. But I remember coming here the first time, man. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Bro, it was freezing as fuck, bro. Literally, bro, I won't lie to you, man. When I came out of the plane, I was like, whoa, this is not right. No, really, no joke. As soon as I just came out to play, first thing I couldn't feel was my Mickey. I was like, where the fuck is it gone? It was too cold. It was so cold. And I was like, you know what? I was like, you know what? Let's adapt to this new lifestyle and stuff like that. I wasn't really, really happy, to be honest with you, because first of all, I thought I was going to be in England and I was in Ireland. I was like, okay, what's going on? And it was, my plan was, because, see, back in Africa, everyone that goes to London comes back home and they're famous and like, wow, big dogs. And like, whoa, we went to London. You know, when I come back home and I tell people I went to Ireland, like, where is that? They don't know where Ireland is, you know, that kind of way. Yeah. So I was like, oh my God. But in my head, I said, you know what? One day I'm going to go to London. I don't care how long I'm going to stay. I'm going to go back to London and live there. Then I stayed in Ireland for a while. I moved to a place called Blanchardstown. Yeah. And if you don't know Blanchardstown is like Africa, basically. No, really, Jenny. There's more black people in Blanchardstown than it is in Africa right now. It's actually crazy. So we moved to Blanchardstown when I came to Ireland, and it was fun. Went to, you know, I made friends. My first friend was Barry, and my English was really, it wasn't as great back then. I spoke broken English.
Yeah.
So, but like broken English, like for example, if someone to say, "How are you doing?" In my English, I would say, "How you day?" So that's how I spoke back then. So I was trying to speak English to my friend, but they were teaching me English as well. And they were really friendly, nice. Barry was a very nice guy, teaching me some few slangs and stuff like that. And it was really interesting. After a year, I started falling in love with Ireland. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is actually cool. I like these people. I like the way they roll. It was actually interesting. Started getting to the culture. I went to school here. I went to secondary school in Castle Knox, CCC. I enjoyed school. I loved school and everything. It was actually interesting. I remember in school, this was 2005, I was the only black guy in my school. I felt so special. I was really loved, bro. Yeah. I was so loved. Everybody came over to me. Oh my God, can I touch your hair? I'm like, oh yeah, go ahead. Feels like a Brillo pad. I'm like, what is a Brillo pad? It was actually interesting. They loved me and everything. Fast forward to 2007. I was about to finish school. I was in sixth year. And this other black guy came in. I was like, man, you coming to take my shine? What's going on? I wasn't loved as much anymore. The love was divided now. I was like, what's going on, bro? Yeah. And literally closed my eyes. Everyone was black. I was like, whoa, what's going on? So it was interesting. It's been a journey, you know. I just find the Irish people very friendly. They were just friendly. They were coming up. They were very curious, asking questions. So what is it like? What do you eat? Why do you dress like that? Why is your hair like this? And I was explaining to them and stuff like that. It was pretty fun and interesting. Yeah, so it was great, and I fell in love with it. So it was really fun. It was really fine with me when I came here.
Here we go.
So, I hate the way the word is. It's like my, as in me, 28 female.
Yeah.
Sister-in-law, Amy, 26 female.
Right.
Always comes to visit us from out of town. She stays with us instead of a hotel and always wants to go to expensive restaurants.
Ooh.
She always conveniently forgets her wallet.
Ooh.
Or comes up with some excuses as to why she can't pay her share. She's implied that since I make so much more money than her, I should be the one to pay. No. Not my husband should pay, but me specifically. I do make a fair amount of money, but not so much that I can treat someone every time they come into town. Nonetheless, in the past, I have just paid the bills and asked her to pay me back. She never has. Bitch. She had made a reservation at an extremely expensive restaurant last night. Before we left, I made it clear that I wouldn't be paying.
She made the reservation?
She made the reservation.
Oh.
I made it clear that I wouldn't be paying her bill. This is where I might be the asshole. And I'll admit, I got this move straight from an episode of 2.5 Men. As we were leaving, her and my husband went to the car. I pretended I forgot something and went back inside. I found her wallet sitting right on top of her suitcase. I put it in my purse and we went to the restaurant. When we were done eating, I asked for separate bills. She said no. We need one bill because she forgot her wallet again. I reached in my purse and said, "This wallet."
Oh, nice.
She was extremely furious. She said that I should not have touched or grabbed her wallet. So, am I the asshole for taking her wallet and bringing it to the restaurant?
Absolutely not.
Categorically not.
But it's not her property to take. I know it's in her
house. So, I believe in this scenario, the woman is not the asshole. But at the same time, she could have, like, I think before she left the house, she should have went, "Here, Amy, Mir here, your wallet's sitting there. I don't want any of this shit."
Yeah.
Like, when you get to the restaurant, this whole pat me down. Oh, I forgot my purse. There it is. I'm telling you, that's where it is.
I'm asking to split the bill. If you haven't brought that thing, you're on your own.
It's the cheek of her actually booking the fucking restaurant too. Like,
see, that's just...
I hated that. Like,
but you see, that's the point. You've set the principle there. You haven't nipped that in the bud, so therefore it's allowed to linger, and now she's taking the hand.
Do you think she's the blame then?
Who?
The sister.
I think the way she's went about it is probably not... Asshole? She's not the asshole.
Not
the but she needed to preemptively be the asshole.
With most Am I the Assholes, there was a breakdown in communication.
Yeah.
We say that, but... almost all of them.
She probably should have talked the wallet, but like give it to her when she got in the car, being like, oh, I ran on the house, I've seen your wallet land, thought I'd give it to you.
You forgot that.
Yeah.
Because then fired out the window.
That there, oops. she would have been like, oh, I didn't want to bring it. Why? Do you expect me to pay for everything?
Aye, at least you know it's addressed before the bill comes down fucking mail.
You need to, I feel like they're using the whole forgetting the wallet thing as the point. The point is not forgetting the wallet. The point is she just doesn't want to pay.
But why would you even go out for dinner with her then?
Exactly.
Do you know?
Yeah. Take her to KFC or something.
I feel like there is people like that, though. If you're hosting them, they feel like, I think that is the thing. Like, if people are going to your house or if you're going But I suppose if you're taking someone out for dinner, like...
Yeah.
But you can't be booking it on the end, being like, oh, yeah, pay for that.
Yeah.
I will say she was not ruled and not the asshole.
And... in these scenarios and times like these where it's so simple to literally just be like, will we go for dinner? Oh, here. Like, we went out for dinner on Saturday night. There was three couples.
Yeah.
It was literally like Bill came. I was like, bosh. Monzo. Literally, as soon as it happened, Neil was like, so I'll split that with some Monzo. I went, yeah, that's grand.
Yeah. I reckon done. Like,
I think both of us paid it at the table. Yeah,
literally. But like, there's no excuse.
Well, it's not an excuse anymore. Like, in these days, like.
But oh, especially,
do you believe though, if someone is on a higher income, that should be an expectation?
No,
I don't know. Like, I don't think it's
maybe with with your partner or something. Like, but if you're going out with,
I think if you're making a good bit more, like,
why would you want to? Like,
well,
why would you want? Like, if someone's like making, like, say that like you got a promotion in work or something, you're making a lot more money than your mate. Them being like, do you? Oh, I've got a big promotion here. I'll take everyone out. You know, I'll treat you all.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. But, like, if you're going out as a mutual decision together, like...
Yeah, it's not the rule. There's an exception to the rule, but it's not the rule.
I think with household income and couples is different. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you're making, like, 60K and your partner's making, like, half that, like...
Yeah.
Like, you could pay more income, a bigger percentage.
But I think that's a different scenario, because obviously that way you kind of are, like, double income. Like, your income is technically... You know, it's all kind of shared.
Yeah.
It all goes towards the same thing. I think the scenario when you're out and there's like, oh, well, here, he's earning 42K a year. I'm only on 28.
Yeah.
He should be pitting. No. I think it's like you're not earning money. You don't go for that promotion. You don't earn that higher amount to treat other people.
But you don't want to. You wouldn't want to be treated differently. Like.
No, definitely not.
The same person who does that would be like, "Oh, you're a big shot. You like your class." Yeah. But then it's like, but then you don't want to pay for your drinks. Aye. Like, fuck.
But like, I know if us all went out and you were earning 65K a year, and me and him were earning 30, like, I know the one thing that me and you would probably say is, "Oh, here, you getting this?" Like, and laughing about it. But I know for now, if you, we'd be like, "Oh, here, split that."
Me and you've went out with work before, and there's people in work that earn a decent whack more than us, and I'd feel seriously rare if one of the senior managers or the directors turned around and went, here, I'm going to pay for your meal per boy.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fuck.
I think it's a different scenario in that scenario where if you're in work and like a really, someone really high up goes, here, I'm taking the team out, ask Grant. But like we have been in a scenario where like a senior manager or something's come over from like England or something and you go out for pints or whatever. And like I have been in the scenario where it's like the third round and he goes, no, I'll get, and I'm like, no, like no offense, but no, like I don't care what your income is. Like, you didn't offer to take us all out. We all said, let's go out and show you a bit of Belfast. But that doesn't mean you should be fronting for everybody, because, like, that's not, you know what I mean? It's not a respectful thing to do, just rip the piss out of someone. Because equally, you don't know. Someone has a higher income, but they could have a higher, you know, outgoings. Yeah. You know what I mean? But, yeah, interesting conversation.
Here we go.
I went out with this lad once,
right?
You know, last year or whatever, and I can't look at nutty crust. the same way. Right?
Why?
We're eating toast one night anyway, right? Because after a night out, no, the toast is a must and a cup of tea. I don't care if I sound like a granny, right? I'm eating toast anyway and butter and we spread the real butter. Now, I was impressed. Like, that was not a nick. He had real butter.
Yeah.
And he was spreading the butter.
So he'd
good start.
On the nutty crust. He had nutty crust. Every day he had nutty crust, right? Spreading the butter on the nutty crust, the real butter. And he's like, look at that.
That's such a culture.
And I was like, yes. And he's like, look at them butter puddles. And I says, sorry, what did you say? He's like, butter puddles. And he just bit into it. And I was like, no, it's an ick. Now I just like was eating my nutty crust and butter. All I'm thinking is butter puddles. And now anytime I eat nutty crust and butter, I think of him. And his butter, look at that. Butter puddles. Yep, class.
We've figured out your favourite butter, your favourite coffee, tea, milk. What's out of everything, go back to the topic at hand. Do you have a favourite quote?
Oh, hi.
Yeah?
Oh,
hi. See, I thought, you know.
I have.
Can't pick favourites.
Absolutely.
With over 1,000 quotes.
I have so many favourites, but I'll keep her concise.
Give us your three.
Right. Pressures for tires.
I like that one.
Pressure for tires. I love a good saying. Maybe that's more of a saying than a quote, but pressures for tires. Another quote I love is what I said earlier, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. Mm-hmm. And probably my most favourite quote that I can relate to, especially over the past 10 years, is that comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, if you're going to look at other people's lives and think that they have X, Y, and Z, it just can steal your joy and you just don't feel enough or accomplished or whatever. But when you focus on what you do have and be grateful for your own blessings and everything that's going on well in your world, then you're filling your cup up of, you know, as cheesy as sounds, joy rather than lack and, you know, not feeling enough. So, yeah, comparison is a thief of joy.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, clinker.